didn't see anything that was used to me on the
Eric, your staff ready? Good morning. Welcome to the Police Judicial and Legal Committee on this Monday, December 5th, Town of Mount Pleasant. Good to see everybody. Thank you all for being here today. And as things wind up for the holidays, don't forget our Christmas parade is coming up, and we hope to see everybody there. That's always fun, but there's a lot of other things going on as well. Item number two would be approval of the minutes from our October 31st meeting.
Move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion and we have a second, and since we have a unbroken streak going, there was one small Scrivener's error that, of course, Ms. Chapman found, but got that straightened out. It had nothing to do with the content of the minutes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Item number three is public comments. If you'd like to address the committee, please come forward. You have 2.5 minutes. Somebody's got the timer. And welcome to our first commenter.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, committee. Thank you for your time. My name is Joe Furstner, and I live in Bell Hall Plantation. And for a while now, there's been a business that distributes plastic bags with pebbles in it with their commercial advertisement for their business services. And they throw them in thousands of driveways throughout Mount Pleasant. I picked up enough till I couldn't carry them anymore, but the town's had a plastic bag ordinance since 2018, and it specifically prohibits plastic bags be distributed by businesses to their customers in the town of Mount Pleasant. This stuff, the rocks are in it to keep it from blowing away in the rain. I mean, blowing away in the wind, but the rain will bring these things into the gutter, into the marsh, and into the ocean. So that is the exact reason there's a plastic ban ordinance, is not allow these bags to get in our waterways and clog up our drainage systems. I don't really feel like I need to talk for the whole 2 minutes, because to me, this is a plain violation of an ordinance that was meant to protect our waterways and our environment. And I'm a small businessman myself. I support small businesses, but there's better ways to advertise than ruining our environment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, please.
Mike, thank you, 208 Benning. I'm here representing a group of a business owner, a resident, and others who met based on your recommendation. And we have sent you the recap of our meeting on Friday, and we look forward to discussing this with you during the order of business. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next, please. Anyone else for public comment? Going once. All right. Item number four, police matters, employee years of recognition, and then an announcement. Chief?
Good morning, Mayor, members of committee. This morning we get to recognize Becky for 5 years of service. Becky is our senior victim advocate, and she does a lot more than just advocating for some of a senior that's the victim of a crime. A lot of the work that she does on a daily basis is preventing victims in our town from becoming, preventing seniors from becoming a victim. She also does a lot of work alongside the fire department with just mobility and helping seniors have a better quality of life. So thank you for 5 years of service, and we look forward to many more. Next, the announcement is police department recently was reaccredited for the 10th time. The Commission on Law Enforcement Accreditation was established in 1979 with the purpose of increasing the professionalism of law enforcement by establishing standards. We were first accredited in 1992. So what I told the commissioners during our review is that I've grown up in an agency that has been accredited the entire time I've been here, and I can't think of why I would want to work anywhere else other than a nationally accredited law enforcement agency. So this was our 10th award for advanced law enforcement accreditation. I'll read just a little bit about that. Advanced law enforcement accreditation program was specifically designed for elite organizations striving to demonstrate professional excellence within a comprehensive range of operational and administrative functional responsibilities. The agency is participating in the program are prepared to manage the life, health, safety issues, ensuring a range of community engagement to sound personnel at practices and at addresses. Law enforcement agencies, advanced law enforcement agency accreditation results in a highly performing organization with the capacity to address operational administrative challenges to serve as industry leaders. So I'm very proud of the fact that we received this meritoriously, and it is our 10th award. So I'd also like to thank every member of the department for their adherence and dedication to the philosophy of being accredited. It's our lifestyle. It's how we function as an organization. So some agencies do it because they're told they have to, and it's forced. We love it. We wouldn't have it any other way. So I'd also like to recognize Bill Martin, our accreditation manager. Come up here, Bill. Bill has done a tremendous job since becoming the accreditation manager for the department. Day in, day out, he ensures that we are tracking all of our standards and we're providing proofs of compliance. He also stays after the bureau commanders for any reviews and analysis that need to be done. So thank you for your work and contribution to reaccreditation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You know something about this?
Chief, if you leave, and get your pictures.
Sure.
I just want to thank you and congratulate you on this reaccreditation. I mean, I spoke a few minutes ago. I went to two of them as a chief. And it is a very nerve-wracking, very experience sitting before that board of your peers from across the nation answering questions. And when I started Mount Pleasant, we were not accredited. We were in the process of becoming. And you just hit on the head, Chief. This is a lifestyle for Mount Pleasant and the Mount Pleasant police officers. It's a year-round process. It's not something that I've watched other agencies the last minute try to stuff files, get their standards in place and their proofs in place. So congratulations and well done to you and your entire police department. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
All right. I believe that's it for police matters, judicial matters. There are no agenda items. This moves us to legal matters, the meat of our agenda today.
Good morning.
So if you'll walk us through these, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor, members of the committee. The first item under legal is discussion and possible action regarding a memorials and monuments policy. I believe you have a copy of it in your materials and would like to take about 2 minutes to walk through it and identify any areas of discussion. The town does not have a memorials and monuments policy. As you are aware, it is now an ad hoc type situation where whether it is brought forward by council members or citizens, there is no direction. If you look at the proposed ordinance, the first item, item A, is definitions. And within that section, I would direct you to the definitions of large memorials and small memorials. You will see the distinction, essentially greater than $1,000, works of art, architectural items, sculptures, things of those nature. Small memorials are generally trees, benches, things like that. That is the important distinction in this ordinance. You will see in section B criteria for each. Small is a commemoration of an individual or event, and that would be a staff decision and approval process. The large memorial is really where the ordinance sets forth the criteria, and you will see under at the bottom of the second page under large memorials, there are criteria that staff and then ultimately council would evaluate to determine whether these memorials are appropriate. So essentially the nature of the contribution of the person or group, the nature of the site, whether there is already a memorial, the design process and the content, and identifying for commercial benefit, and then criteria related to location, risk assessment, art design merit, and historic district. So the application process, which is created by this ordinance, there is an application process. The requesting party, whether it be a citizen or a council, has to start with the application process. And that's when these criteria are additionally identified and vetted. From the large memorial standpoint, once you get into page four, you will see the page four of six, you will see that staff reviews and approves the large memorials and must send it to our historical commission. That would be a step in the process. There would be a tailing ordinance expanding the scope of our historical commission, as they are not technically charged with this mission. So we would increase their scope to include this review. You will also see that if necessary, we can have input from the Design Review Board, Risk Management and Public Works, Historic District Preservation for those applications related to projects located within the Historic District, as well as the Culture, Arts, and Pride Commission related to art type issues. So we believe that covers it. Once the process goes through staff and staff is satisfied that the application process has been met, all of the criteria have been met, it would then, and of course, sending it to DRB or whoever else needed to weigh in, it would go to council. At that time, council could very well request additional review from any of those boards, bodies, or commissions, as well as direct staff to provide further information. A few final details. Council shall have discretion to relocate, disassemble, or remove or dispose of any memorial or monument within the town limits. And then roles and responsibilities. This is something that I believe is worthy of discussion, and that is related to cost and funding. If it is a town-generated project, obviously the town would fund it. If not, then we would, at least we've put in here a minimum of 5 years the cost of installation as well as the cost of maintenance, the donor would have to be responsible for the 5 years. That is a little bit tricky as to how that's done. Council could require that money held in escrow if necessary, but that would be at least how we've thought through the best way to handle this. So that is the overview, and I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pagliarini. I think this is very detailed. I think it certainly follows up on our points and questions from when we originally took this up. I forget when that was. Was that October? I think
it was October.
October.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. I know I have a couple of questions and clarifications, but let me open it up to the committee first. Yes, sir. Hit your mic.
I always think I speak loud enough. Thank you. Mr. Pagliarini, I'm referencing the 5 years when the town's responsible. Make sure I understand, if it's not a town-sponsored memorial or monument, if it's an individual or a group bringing it forward, are they responsible for the monies that be paid to the town for that maintenance part? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
They would be responsible not only for the development and construction, but also, at least as we've written it, for 5 years.
And then after that 5 years?
Well, it could be longer. We could add a provision that council has discretion to make it longer, but ultimately then it would be the town's responsibility.
Okay. So I just don't think the town would ever allow something to become fall in disrepair.
Right.
That's why I was asking that question. I think the escrow comment you mentioned is probably the right way to go to get it up ahead of time instead of having it put into place. And then next thing you know, we're responsible for it. Cause again, we would continue to care for that. I just know how the town is. I appreciate the work on this. And obviously, I'm working with the town right now to recognize one of our fallen police officers, and I think it's so important. And I believe the consistency that this will give and the guidance this will give, it doesn't stop anyone from placing a monument. It helps us do it the right way and put it in the right place. So I appreciate that. My only other question, sir, and I know you and I talked about this, and maybe the section here where it says the town can remove and disassemble what we feel necessary, how are we addressing, or do we need to address those pop-up and spontaneous memorials I talked about? And I go back to during the period of civil unrest, you know, across the nation, even here locally, where these pop-up memorials were being placed in different places. Do we set a time limit on how long they can be here? Or, I mean, is there any consideration for that?
I think the first consideration is whether it is on town property or a public right-of-way. We do not have a policy or procedure specifically in place. It is a violation of our ordinances, and therefore the town would have the discretion in those situations for immediate removal. We could certainly codify that. I think there's a part that staff probably uses, as always our staff does, is discretion and sensitivity to those things. But if this committee and ultimately council would wish for us to provide a more specific policy on that, we can do that. Otherwise, if it is not on town property or in the public right-of-way, it could violate our sign ordinance or various other types of zoning regulations.
Well, since we're talking about it, specifically a memorial and monument ordinance that we're looking to bring forward, I personally would like to see something in here about pop-up memorials specifically. And you're right, sir, we would have discretion. You know, we're not going to immediately go out and tear somebody's memorial down, you know, family members, something's happening to them, or whatever the reason may be. But just in my opinion, I think if we're working on a memorial and monument ordinance, let's have that piece in there that protects the town. That's just my opinion. Thank you.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You, Mr. Pellegrini.
Before we move on, and I'll recognize you, I want to echo that, because if we had a tragedy or loss of life or something, I'm sure our residents would want to show the heart of the town, and I don't want to put our law enforcement in the position of being out there saying all this has got to go. You know, maybe there's something like after 7 days it's reviewed by the town. Of course, if it was a roadside thing, it could be hazardous to other people as well. But if people decided to just memorialize, the loss of a member of the community or somebody in service to the town, we don't want to be too draconian in saying, I'm sorry, that violates our regulations. So thank you for bringing that up. Ms. Chapman.
Thank you, Mayor. Having participated in another jurisdiction with things like this, on page 4 of 6, item 2AII, the word historical commission for evaluation and recommendation, and then further down says the historic district preservation commission. And I should know this, but do we have a historical commission separate from the historic district preservation commission?
Yes, sir. Our historical commission is really designed with reviewing and cataloging, guiding the historical artifacts, documents of the town. So this, as I mentioned earlier, this would be an expansion of their mission. The mayor has had, and as well as I, have had conversations with the chair, to ensure that they believe that they are qualified and have the ability to fulfill these requirements. And Mayor, I believe they were adamant.
They were very positive towards that. That's the historical commission. The other one used to be the old village historic district.
Right. I just wanted to
make
sure that I hadn't missed something in the translation here. And would the historical commission feel that they could handle the issue with culture, arts, and pride? Commission. My thought is, we don't want to make this too hard. If there is a valid item to be commemorated.
Right.
And all I'm saying is do we really need all of these four other agencies, groups, whatever you want to call them, to review this? As an example, town staff has already suggested to review it before it even gets further. And so risk management and public works departments,
right,
I would think, are part of town staff. And so my question becomes, is this somewhat redundant once it goes to staff and the historical commission?
May I, Mr. Pegler?
Yes.
I'd like to respond to that. Yeah, yes, I think we need all of them. One of the lessons we learned from General Tant's committee when they were doing the war memorial was there were people who said their great-great-grandfather died in this battle or whatever and wanted their names on that memorial. And true historical research proved that, in some cases, that could not be proven. So we don't want to put that burden on staff. We haven't hired our staff based on their ability to verify those things, but we have appointed commissions with that ability and that purpose. And their chair, Deborah Sutherland, came in and said they would welcome that. The other would be just to make sure that when, you know, we're all in agreement on a plaque or the wording of a statue, but those folks and they're being appointed to the historical commission, their purpose is to find out what's the key thing that needs to be said on there. You know, we could have a monument that said, these are some really great people. Well, that doesn't really speak to generations 100 years from now. We need to say, this is the historical significance of this and why it's significant to the town of Mount Pleasant. And the DRB thing, and if I may tag on to your point as well, where it says in that paragraph two, the two small line right there, it says may forward. I would like for it to say shall forward. For one is design review board, because we would like the monuments and things, and Chief, we've had this conversation, to be consistent with the theme and the look and the actual design of our parks and our public lands, because they were even like right out here in the front, the front lawn. If you've been to some events out there, which I have, some of them, you know, Chief, like the memorial candle lighting for the opioid crisis, and some, the fun Hispanic music festival where we were out there, one of the best parties we've had in this town, put it on your calendar for next year. That whole thing was designed with a focus and a feel, and it gets that effect. And whether it's luminaries to remember people or music and fun for people to be out there dancing, which they were, we just don't want, and I'm not talking about us, but down the road, whether it's the waterfront park or this part of, you know, somebody might say, well, I want a really nice monument right in the middle of that. Well, that may not be the best place. And I think the design review board ought to weigh in on that, because, again, we have credentialed people there. That's just my feeling on that, Mr. Chapman. Let me ask a procedural question. Are you asking at this point, if we make changes for this, we could have it for first reading on Tuesday?
We're prepared to do that, sir, if
okay.
That's what the committee wishes.
Because I do want to suggest a change or two. But Ms. Whitley, please.
No, I'd just like to make a motion that we send this to council with a recommendation to approve.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. I would like to add an amendment on page 4. Item 2, large memorials, subsection, is that 1 or 2? I didn't bring my glass. That's 2. Little I, where it says may forward. Yeah. Right. Where it says recommendation of approval or denial of the application may. Also forward the application to one or more of the following. May we put in there shall forward to the following? Let's get all our appointed committees involved.
Mayor, as I understand, you're in addition to design review board as this motion as a shall is historical commission is already included in the shall. You're asking for DRB as well as risk management, public works, historic preservation, should it apply, and CAP as
yes.
All
yes. Yes. just changing May to South. So that would be a motion. Do I have a second? And a second. Any discussion?
I just want to make it clear that, it still says it's applicable. So if it doesn't involve art, then it wouldn't go to the Culture Arts Tribe.
Right.
So only if applicable.
Right.
Okay. All right. That's fine with me.
Okay. All right. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So it is amended to say that. A quick question I have. So for instance, the Magwood statue that has been begun, not the statue, but the fundraising for that. We just got another check in recently from another reason, but it was to go towards that. Is that the type thing that would have a time limit? Was the time limit on the care of those, or was the time limit on the getting it funded from start to finish?
Sir, the time limit is on the maintenance.
Maintenance, not on, okay. I just didn't know if we're setting a clock that will affect fundraising. But there again, that would be one that when a design is proposed, if this passes council, then it would, it would go to CAP and they would take a look at that.
Correct.
And for the placement and all that. Huh?
Do I need to make an amendment as well, or just amend it for the language? Yes, sir, if you would do
that. Put the language in for the pop-up and,
yeah.
Okay. So then I would like to make an amendment for the, to add language in our new ordinance that addresses pop-up and spontaneous monuments to include maybe some type of time limit. And obviously, the language of discretion for our law enforcement group here.
I'll second that amendment.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? So this will, provided this passes, which it will, but this would be when we get the first draft for Tuesday's meeting. Is that correct?
Correct, sir. And then, of course, all of council would have the opportunity to review it. And if there were further amendments, that would take place in January.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Any discussion? All right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Right.
Motion passes unanimously. I have one other question.
That was the amendment, right? So do we have to do the?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is before we vote on the final. Where this says the very last one on page 4, town council shall have discretion to relocate, disassemble, or remove and dispose of any memorial or monument within town limits. So we're going through an arduous process to build one, but just a whim of council, I mean, five people can summarily decide to remove one. Should we, I like the look I'm getting from our attorney. I think there should be a process so that things like removing monuments are not done on a political whim.
Language include the word because there's something
may I make sure. A quick suggestion? Just what I would suggest is, and I'm not ready to put this in the form of a motion to amendment, but with the advice after receiving the advice of the applicable committees, it might not be for a political reason. We might find that some historical fact has been grossly misrepresented on something. And that it's really not appropriate for that monument as is. And we're thinking years and years and years down the road. So we don't want just council to vote. Maybe they should go to the historical commission and say, how could we make this right?
Yes, sir. And understand the first thing is the state of South Carolina has a statute about removal of, it's basically related to Confederate and war type. So the right. State already controls some of this. We did think about this process, and you can create a process that is very detailed. But Mayor, yes, I think we could say after advice, I think it could be removed for several reasons, disrepair. There are any number of reasons right. that something could be removed, but we'll add in that it should be sent to the Historical Commission or for other reasons. The other consideration that sometimes we do where, as Mayor said, if it, five council members, we could make that a supermajority if that's what the council wishes to do.
I think that would be good, too.
My question is for me. Yeah. Going back to the historical tradition,
right.
Look at it. Mr. Winfield was worried minus that wasn't involved with the historical commission to deal with. All of our monuments have to have some type of input.
Right, unless that's at least one concern. The issue for removal may not be related to the historical commission. For example, if it's disrepair or anything of that nature.
Correct. That's what I was wondering. Why would it go then to them for consideration for removal if that wasn't the reasoning we were looking at it?
What I'm envisioning is that it would be sent to the appropriate board or commission, and council must perform due diligence. We can add in that level. I understand that that is not specific, but we can create a layer of due diligence. And then, of course, if council wants to consider the supermajority, that's always out there as well.
If somebody else wants to make the motion, or I'll make the motion to add to this section three, that it would require a supermajority of council after due diligence, which would include advice from the applicable committee or group as mentioned elsewhere in the ordinance.
So moved.
Okay, so that did turn out to be okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment passes unanimously. Are there any other proposed amendments before we vote on the overall motion to approve? All right. All those in favor of approving as amended the draft ordinance, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Our next item is was brought forward by the committee related to Chapter 53 of the Mount Pleasant Code of Ordinance pertaining to environmentally acceptable packaging and products. We have just put together a brief presentation for you. And before you review that, we've essentially provided what we think are three basic choices on this that hopefully it makes it easy for the committee to digest review. There is a possibility that you can choose A and B, A, B, and C, or none of the above. And with that, I'd like to thank James Ward for putting this together, and he is going to run you through the presentation.
Good morning. So as you're all probably aware, this issue was raised at last council meeting during public comment when, again, like it was today, a public comment of advertisers putting plastic bags on driveways, and the concern was that that would wash off and harm the environment and get into our waterways. Like Mr. Pagliarini mentioned, we have three solutions. So, and it's kind of a sliding scale, with the first being the least restrictive, and then the third being the most restrictive, and the second being in the middle. So the first would be an amendment to the littering regulations of our code. The second is an amendment to the commercial and non-commercial handbill section of our code. And then the last is an amendment to the chapter 53, which is the ban on plastic bags. So first for the littering regulations, currently our littering statute just state that no person shall deposit litter upon any street, sidewalk, or other public place within the town, except in public receptacles. Our proposed amendment would be that it could be the duty of every person who is handing out that advertising material to take whatever measures necessary so that that material does not litter upon any public or private property. And then we would add a section that would be a penalty under that section would be the penalty under 136.99, which is our maximum maximum criminal penalty, $500 or 30 days and or 30 days in imprisonment. So that's the first one. The second one would be amendment to the commercial and non-commercial handbill section. So currently we have a ordinance in our code which prohibits anybody from handing or depositing handbills, pamphlets in either abandoned properties, vehicles, on public property. And then there's also a provision that prohibits them doing from private property that are inhabited unless that material is directly handed to a resident of that property, and then they now accept ownership of it. And then there's an exemption in that statute for newspapers and mail. But there's a definition in there of commercial handbill. Again, only includes paper material as it is right now, but we would amend that section to include any material that is in a plastic bag, or any other advertising material that could be handed out for that purpose. And again, still have the exclusion from newspaper and mail. And then same as the previous section, the penalty under that would be, again, our maximum criminal penalty. And then the last is an amendment to the environmental acceptable packaging and products section. As you can see there, I kind of listed out the ordinances we have. There's basically a ban on single-use plastic carryout bags. And the way that that statute is, or the way single-use plastic carryout bags is defined, is that that bans any you know, restaurant, grocery store, any retailer from using a single-use plastic bag in connection with a sale. So it wouldn't really apply in this circumstance because it's not in connection with the sale, someone's just depositing on private property. So we could add an amendment to where it would also prohibit the use of a plastic bag or any plastic material that would be used for the purpose of advertisement by any advertiser. There are a few just quick constitutional concerns, First Amendment issues. Obviously, we would be regulating commercial speech, which is not as high as regular speech, but there is still some regulation issues. It can't be overbroad. So whatever statute or whatever amendment we propose has to be narrowly tailored to protect that speech.
Thank you. The recommendation from legal is to not address this as part of the plastic bag ordinance. The reason is you start getting into use of plastic bags, it would essentially require a complete ban. We believe that the enforcement mechanism through parts A and B, through our littering and our handbill, is exactly what is necessary to solve this particular issue. So A and B jointly, but not C.
Mr. Mayor, may I?
Yes, please.
Thank you for presenting this, because there's I hate those things in my driveway as well, the packages of locks and all. And before you had presented this, we had actually discussed, or I had mentioned information about the handbill, because I knew we already had the handbill and flyer ordinance. And as it sits now, we can address this in this person who's handing these out now, because they're in violation of that ordinance. Am I correct? Because they are throwing things in driveways and not being handed. So technically, they're violating that already.
Yes.
I agree with you. I would want to add that to our handbill ordinance, that anything into plastic type coverings or what the language you use. But I think we have an ordinance that we can address it now, even before we get to that point of implementing the amendments and get these folks stopped, and then add that to strengthen it. So yes, I agree with you, sir. I mean, it, that is correct. If we wanted to address it now, we could, but since we had a name, a phone number of the individual, tell them that they're already in violation of our handbill ordinance.
Yes, sir, I think okay. We can. I think for the benefit of our citizens also to understand, and our businesses to clearly understand what they can and cannot do, these amendments make it easier for everyone to understand that this would be a prohibited act.
And if we bring this amendment forward, do you need them just separate amendments for each of the ordinance, or?
Well, sir.
Because you have two ordinances you're looking to add to.
We would amend the two ordinances, and that's our littering ordinance and our handbill ordinance, with the amendments that James prepared and put up on the screen. And we believe those two would cover the issue in total.
I'd like to move that we recommend to full council the amendments to items A and B as proposed by legal.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Let me ask real quick. I'm assuming that there are no, if we do these amendments to those two, there's no constitutional concerns.
I believe that's correct, sir.
Okay. I mean, as we've learned in Council 101, we can always be challenged, but what we're asking is the legal precedent that these type of things are not.
We would take the position that use of plastic bags does not endanger free speech.
There we go.
In any way, shape, or form.
Great. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Mayor, I would just like to reemphasize the exclusion for newspapers and mail. Somehow, some way, obviously there is advertising in newspapers.
Yes.
So, but I'm a dinosaur. I like my morning newspaper at my house delivered, and I don't want in any way, shape, or form to exclude that.
Right. And when this came up,
if you were, you were on council when we passed the plastic.
Yeah. We figured we could not put one industry out of business. But the other thing is, you subscribe to that newspaper. You ask for that newspaper. And there's a difference between that and having someone just come along and throw stuff on your driveway, which is a nuisance. Exactly. So we have a motion and a second to propose these amendments to those sections of our code that ought to put teeth into this issue. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 All right, passes unanimously. Look forward to seeing that next Tuesday night. This brings us to, and I want to thank Mr. Firstner for bringing that to our attention. Thank you very much.
Mayor, before we move on, can we ask staff to make the necessary contact before we even change this, since it's available today in our ordinances?
The only question I have is, I mean, are we directing, are we directing staff activity and priorities where
we're not? Do not recommend that council direct those activities.
Right.
I think we
right. You make the point without making the point. All right. This moves us to 6C, the noise ordinance, which we will... in a month, we will be in our second year of working on.
That's
so
right.
Congratulations, everybody. We might have a little party. A couple of things. One is, I think we, if you go back to our last meeting where we discussed this, one, we asked the community to work together, residents and businesses, and we have two of those who did that. We're not playing favorites or circumventing our public comments thing. We asked them to meet and come back and talk to council. So we're going to ask them to tell us about that meeting. But second of all, Mr. Pagliarini has sent us a great compendium of noise ordinance, actually from three states, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. I had an opportunity to take a look at some of those. I think what I see is that most places do not have a one-size-fits-all ordinance. They do have different levels for different types of areas. It was hard in looking at those to understand what their zoning classifications are, but I think we get the gist of it. So I'll turn it over to you for that, and I did want to thank you all for getting us those. Those are great to see.
Thank you. Again, we believe that at least what was provided is a good cross-section and identifies some of the very issues. And as the mayor pointed out, that is one element about location, and I would say location matters. The committee over the past year, as well as council and staff, has struggled with the zoning element of it. And one way, at least I believe it's a little softer, is to say residential areas, meaning perhaps an enhanced attention when some business backs residential areas, rather than tie it to particular zoning, which is a problem throughout this process and in consultation with our police department. The idea has been to arm, so to speak, our PD with the necessary language and clarity to assist them. Not to make it more confusing, but that's where the specific zoning designations potentially cause problem. However, I do believe there's room in the ordinance if council wishes for a discretionary measure when a business or when you're in a residential area, so to speak. And we would simply, again, that is within our law enforcement officer's discretion, but again, we believe they have every ability to make those types of distinctions should council wish to make that distinction.
Right. And I just want to say again, I hope I'm not alone in this. I think if we can figure out how to distinguish between the different areas, then the decibel issue and debate becomes easier. The ones I saw, and I've got screen captures in here because I was looking at the emails, but I believe it was Hilton Head and Greenville have a chart, and they have for this area, the music is these times, and the decimal levels are this. I believe it was those two.
Yes, sir. And if anyone's been to Greenville in the last 10 or 15 years, they've developed a downtown area that really
is happening.
Right. That's where it is. So not every locale has the same geographical. We would probably be required to divide those up. Of course, we have, you know, we have Shem Creek, we have Park.
The town center, where I was last night for
right,
a thing.
Yeah. All of those, it would require a little bit more precision, I think, on our part. And that's why I think if this is what this committee wishes to at least discuss, it's probably better to utilize some of the language that we found in others, that if it's in a residential area.
Okay.
And again, it doesn't require that level of drilling down. And Councilmember Ritchie can probably articulate this better than anyone, whether broad language like that would be helpful.
Council?
No, I'd just like to say, Mayor,
hit your button.
Thank the neighbors for trying to work together. I think that's a perfect example of how our community operates rather than being directed by council. And so I commend the residents and the business owners for trying to work together to come up with a solution that has evaded us for the last year.
So why don't we at this point ask Mike Tinkey and Wade Bowles to come up and tell us, and we are pushing up on our time. We have a 10 o'clock meeting, but if y'all give us sort of a synopsis. And Wade, I just want to thank you as well. When you haven't been here, they have talked about how you work with the community, you listen, and everybody knows Wade is Saltwater Cowboys, and I just want to thank you for representing the spirit of our community.
Well, good morning. Good morning, Council Mayor, Council members. Thank you for allowing me to come up here and speak today. A group of us met last week, a group of neighbors, residential neighbors, and some business owners met to discuss the noise ordinance issue, and they asked me to come up and speak today to give you my experience of some of the issues that I've had. And I'd like to say the takeaway word I would like to express today is harmony. Living in harmony, as most of you guys may or may not, folks may or may not know, my family's been serving food on Shem Creek for 55 years consistently. So the only thing that I think that's changed on Shem Creek would be maybe some of the name of the restaurants and some of the residents that live around the area. But we've all been able to live together in a harmonious fashion for at least as long as I can remember, at least for the 55 years that my family's been serving food on Shem Creek. And we've been able to do that because we've been able to work together. This isn't the first time that a noise ordinance has come in front of our family with other residents on Shem Creek and around the area. But most recently, as the owner of a restaurant, Saltwater Cowboys on Shem Creek, we've had a few issues with some neighbors that have complained about some of the live music that happens at the restaurant. And we decided to deal with it one-on-one and to reach out to the folks that had the issues and to basically say, what do we need to do to solve this problem? And we approached it from the standpoint of we all have to live together. And I think the approach was the give and take. Folks that live there understand that businesses need to maintain the business, and we need to respect the fact that people live beside us. So the approach that we took was to communicate with our neighbor and figure out a sound level that worked. As I mentioned before, one of the things we basically did was when we had live entertainment, I would call the gentleman that had the problem on the phone and said, can you hear the music now? And we reached a level that he said, well, I can't hear any longer. And I had a decibel reading, and we said, does that work for you? And he said, yes. However, we've come to realize since then that all noise is not equal. Okay? And the fact of the matter is because we've created a relationship with our neighbor, we've been able to respond to some of his issues at hand. So the decibel reading that we came to an agreeable amount at sometimes didn't work. It wasn't the decibel levels, it was the bass. He was still hearing bass and thumping in his house. So at that point, what we did was we vetted all of our entertainers, let them know the issues that we had. We made sure that they toned it down. We adjusted the bass. But we've even gone to the second and third step. We've repositioned some of our speakers to where it didn't interfere as much as possible with the neighbor. The other thing we did is we put some decibel and bass regulators through our music board that it was kind of like a governor on a car, where you can't, the bass and the sound can't go above a certain level. So it was a regulator. And we went and we purchased our own speakers. We've purchased the regulators to come through their speakers to maintain a level that's acceptable with our neighbors. And that's really, really helped. We don't get any calls anymore. So that's worked for us. Some of the other points that we discussed, I think, was the fact that...
So Wade, one question yeah, would sure. be, this works for you as a business as well. This is not impeding your outdoor entertainment. It's just...
Well, that was what I was going to say is the time that we've elected to quit playing live entertainment has not affected my business.
Okay. And what time is that?
Well, during the week at 9 o'clock, we can cut it off and it doesn't stop me at all. Now there's some times during the weekend we run it a little longer, but our neighbor knows that. And he expects that. So we've been able to work together and talk with him. And he says, you know, I understand on certain holidays, he expects during certain holidays that that things are going to have live entertainment there. And we just work together. To me, it's all about communication. I think there needs to be a standard for sure. And that's what I guess we're here for. And I'm meeting up here with the city of Greenville. Looks like it's a great, great start, great approach. I just know what works for us is communicating and doing what works best for both sides. And really, that's all I have to say about that.
Great. Thank you.
Anything else?
Mike.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Wade.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Members of the council. I'm Cheryl Schell. I live at 241 Middle Street, and I'm also here on behalf of the owners of the Post House Basic Development. My apologies if I appear a little bit unprepared. I didn't know about the meeting until this morning. But two things that have been said in this room so far this morning, and that is, it's clear that this committee and this town knows the difference between shall and may. Yeah, Mr. Mayor, you made that distinction earlier. And to follow up on what Mr. Bowles said, one size does not necessarily fit all. So I think this committee and our town has seen the effort that has gone into this for quite some time. But I think that also demonstrates that more effort is needed. I don't think we're there yet because I don't think one size can fit all. And I think there has to be some level of acceptance and ability to satisfy both the residents and the businesses in our town that help make us what we are, help our tax base, help our citizens enjoy what they do, and the ability to go to Shem Creek or other areas around and enjoy what Mr. Bowles' family has delivered to us for 55 years. To that end, just as I did at the last meeting before this committee, what I would ask is, please, I know it's been a long time. I know that deliberation has gone into this, but this is not something that I can say from a legal standpoint the town needs to go into without the due diligence that is put forth so far, and continue due diligence to get something that is acceptable to both our fine residents and to our important businesses. To that extent, again, I offer up my availability to help the town and the residents, and offer that up on behalf of Mr. Graves and Basic Development as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. One other element of what this committee has talked about is getting council members out. And the holidays are a good time, December through New Year's. And so, Chief, we would like to work with your department and get some council members out to go actually experience decibel levels. Again, this is just going out and reading. This isn't going on calls or complaints. This is, I did it. I went to Saltwater Cowboys. The reading there was, this was on a cold winter night too, when the, you know, very still, like 90 decibels right there on the deck. The property next door wasn't even hitting 55. It was 53. So it can be done, and it works. Which brings up a question too. Are these decibel levels from these other towns, is that at the, that's not at the source, obviously. That's at whoever may be complaining, right?
No, sir. Correct, sir. That's based on property line.
Right.
And that's a good point. One of the things at least we wanted to try to cover, and specifically if you look at Wilmington, North Carolina, you look at Greenville, and you look at Raleigh, North Carolina, you'll see that there's a distinction about districts or areas. And then for however each municipality categorizes it, downtown, residential, commercial, those general designations can do it. And you'll see anything from 75 decibels. The lowest that we see is 55. That's midnight to 7 a.m. in a residential district. So that's the low point. We're seeing some, I said high around 85, so, or 75, excuse me. That seems to be the range. And then, as James just pointed out to me, there's a provision. If you can't tell the, one of them has a provision where if you can't tell the district or it's impossible to determine, well, then you average it. Well, you know, those are the types of things that we would rather not see and have discretion among our officers to make those determinations rather than that level.
That's how we keep lawyers in business, right?
I guess so.
Okay. Ms. Tinkey, we're a little over time, but
I want to thank y'all for recommending this. I want to thank Mr. Bowles and Jeremy Graves from the Post House for working together with us and his manager. I thought it was very fruitful to work together. We learned a lot. I would add that decimal meeting, a reading alone is, as Mr. Bowles said, has to have the specific nationally recognized base frequency component to it. Otherwise, it is not meeting the need. The Geegans were not here this morning, but they had a problem with one of the businesses again over the weekend, and it was the base level that was giving the problems. And so there are nationally recognized standards, and I would ask that you look at that. The second was that we felt like there were outliers both in the commercial and in residential, but we were looking for harmony among the vast majority of the people. There are always going to be an outlier here or there, but we're looking for something for the mass majority. We do think that there have been a few repeat commercial offenders, and there needs to be language in the that with exponentially raising levels of fines, and including perhaps loss of license if they don't address it. In one particular issue, the manager told the police officer as well as the resident who was there, the owner told him just to keep playing the music, he'd pay the fine. And that's verbatim. So so we recommend, I thought what Mr. Bowles did was perfect. He did one-on-one. And so we're just one area, two areas, around the Post House and around Shem Creek. But there's others. So let's have that one-to-one. And if it comes from a business owner to a business owner that understands it, that's much more powerful than any adversarial type of relationship. Mr. Graves was very clear that all ordinances should be consistently enforced in residential and commercial. So there's not any exception, so it should work for everybody. We didn't have a definitive answer on zones. We thought needs more study. That's what y'all have been talking about. We did think noise, all noise is an issue, not just the resident, not just the commercial hospitality. So the power blowers came up again. We didn't come up with a recommendation, but you know, it did come up again. We did think, and I mean this with total respect, but the police officers need to be educated on the ordinances in a couple situations. They were told, they told the business owner and the resident that there wasn't a zoning or, I mean, a noise ordinance in place. On more than one occasion. So there really is one in place right now. There's one that's being considered, and that should be looked at. And And I guess, and we thank you for your due diligence, and we all commit to working mutually on a solution that fits everybody. And I think taking the time, as Cheryl said, is important because we don't have harmony. And I thought that was a perfect thing that Mr. Bowles said, that the key phrase is harmony is key. If we have dissension, and when that dissension goes down and there's harmony starting to form like this, that's when you know you're about ready to do something. So again, thank you very much for your time and effort.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mayor, yes, final words. If individually you have thoughts on what you'd like to see, please let us know, and we'll have several options prepared for the next meeting so that you can review those in total.
Okay.
And we're really looking at, again, some of the exemptions, again, the decibel levels, and then how, if at all, the committee wishes to divide residential, commercial, and of course anything else. But we'll have those amendments prepared so that you can see the language and see how those would operate, and it would further provide the public an opportunity to comment on those.
Thank you. And as we consider going out and doing this, if we can go two or three together, we don't need any quorum, but that'll cut down on the number of trips we have to coordinate with our police. And it'll be fun, and you know, go out and get a drink at Shem Creek afterwards. After you, I'm talking about like water or tea or something. Lewis, we're a little over time.
Very briefly, I would just like to recommend that someone on town council and someone on staff meet with when we meet, so that there is interplay and a hand in the till from the word go.
Okay, if y'all will let us know.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Last thing, I hope that we would be privy to the wonderful research that you've been doing, so that when we're meeting, we would have that as well. We try to provide research to each of y'all that we've done, but y'all done apparently some great research, and we'd love to see that too and blend that with you.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Council, anything on that? All right. So next month, we know kind of where we'll be and how to move this ball along. That concludes our agenda. Next thing is to adjourn. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.